43. Retreat. When he hastily emerged from the hole they had lasered, it seemed to Norton that the six sons of Rama were as brilliant as ever. Surely, he thought, Rousseau must have made a mistake, though that was not like him at all. But Rousseau had anticipated just this reaction. "It happened so slowly," he explained apologetically, "that it was a long time before I noticed any difference. But there's no doubt about it. I've taken a meter reading. The light level's down 40%. Now, as his eyes readjusted themselves after the gloom of the glass temple, Norton could believe him. The long day of Rama was drawing to its close. It was as warm as ever, yet Norton felt himself shivering. He had known this sensation once before, during a beautiful summer day on Earth. There had been an inexplicable weakening of light, as if darkness was falling, or the sun had lost its strength, though there was not a cloud in the sky. Then he had remembered that a partial eclipse had begun. "This is it," he said grimly. "We're going home. Leave all the equipment behind. We won't need it again." Now, he hoped, one piece of planning was about to prove its worth. He had selected London for this raid because no other town was so close to a stairway. The foot of Beta was only 4 kilometers away. They set off at the steady, loping trot that was the most comfortable mode of traveling at half a gravity. Norton set a pace that, he estimated, would get them to the edge of the plain without exhaustion and in the minimum of time. He was acutely aware of the 8 kilometers they would still have to climb when they had reached Stairway Beta, but he would feel much safer when they had actually started the ascent. The first tremor came when they had almost reached the stairway. It was very slight, and instinctively Norton turned toward the south, expecting to see another display of fireworks around the horns. But Rama never seemed to repeat itself exactly. If there were any electrical discharges above those needle-sharp mountains, they were too faint to be seen. "Bridge," he called. "Did you notice that?" "Yes, Skipper. Very small shock. Could be another attitude change. We're watching the rate gyro. Nothing yet. Just a minute. Positive reading. Can just detect it. Less than a microradian per second, but holding." So Rama was beginning to turn, though with almost imperceptible slowness. Those earlier shocks might have been a false alarm, but this, surely, was the real thing. "Rate increasing. 5 microrad. "Hello, did you feel that shock?" "We certainly did. Get all ship's systems operational. We may have to leave in a hurry." "Do you expect an orbit change already? We're still a long way from perihelion." "I don't think Rama works by our textbooks. Nearly at Beta. We'll rest there for 5 minutes. 5 minutes was utterly inadequate, yet it seemed an age, for there was now no doubt that the light was failing, and failing fast. Though they were all equipped with flashlights, the thought of darkness here was now intolerable. They had grown so accustomed psychologically to the endless day that it was hard to remember the conditions under which they had first explored this world. They felt an overwhelming urge to escape, to get out into the light of the sun, a kilometer away on the other side of these cylindrical walls. "Hub control," called Norton. "Is the searchlight operating? We may need it in a hurry." "Yes, Skipper. Here it comes." A reassuring spark of light started to shine 8 kilometers above their heads. Even against the now fading day of Rama, it looked surprisingly feeble. But it had served them before, and would guide them once again if they needed it. This, Norton was grimly aware, would be the longest and most nerve-wracking climb they had ever made. Whatever happened, it would be impossible to hurry. If they overexerted themselves, they would simply collapse somewhere on that vertiginous slope, and would have to wait until their protesting muscles permitted them to continue. By this time, they must be one of the fittest crews that had ever carried out a space mission, but there were limits to what flesh and blood could do. After an hour's steady plodding, they had reached the fourth section of the stairway, about 3 kilometers from the plane. From now on, it would be much easier. Gravity was already down to a third of Earth value. Although there had been minor shocks from time to time, no other unusual phenomena had occurred, and there was still plenty of light. They began to feel more optimistic, and even to wonder if they had left too soon. One thing was certain, however: there was no going back. They had all walked for the last time on the central plain of Rama. It was while they were taking a 10-minute rest on the fourth platform that Calvert exclaimed, "What's that noise, Skipper?" "Noise? I don't hear anything." "High-pitched whistle dropping in frequency? You must hear it." "Your ears are younger than mine." "Oh, now I do." The whistle seemed to come from everywhere. Soon it was loud, even piercing, and falling swiftly in pitch. Then it suddenly stopped. A few seconds later it came again, repeating the same sequence. It had all the mournful, compelling quality of a lighthouse siren sending out its warnings into the fog-shrouded night. There was a message here, and an urgent one. It was not designed for their ears, but they understood it. Then, as if to make doubly sure, it was reinforced by the lights themselves. They dimmed, almost to extinction, then started to flash. Brilliant beads, like ball lightning, raced along the 6 narrow valleys that had once illuminated this world. They moved from both poles toward the sea in a synchronized, hypnotic rhythm that could have only one meaning. To the sea, the lights were calling. To the sea, and the summons was hard to resist. There was not a man who did not feel a compulsion to turn back and to seek oblivion in the waters of Rama.
"Hub control," Norton called urgently. "Can you see what's happening?"
The voice of Rousseau came back to him. He sounded awed and more than a little frightened.
"Yes, Skipper. I'm looking across at the southern hemisphere. There are scores of biots over there, including some big ones. Cranes, bulldozers, lots of scavengers. And they're all rushing back to the sea faster than I've ever seen them move before. There goes a crane! Right over the edge, just like Jimmy, but going down a lot quicker.